Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and the views of our guests. And this hour, we're going to have with us Mr. L.A. Marzulli. And we're going to be talking about his book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, The Coming Great Deception, and the Luciferian Endgame. And it's a fascinating book. It's, of course, Mr. Marzulli's written other books. He's written something called the Nephilim Trilogy, going into the background of the Nephilim. Who are the Nephilim? Why, of course, we know from the Bible they were really supernatural creatures. A junction of joining together men and fallen angels. But, of course, could this happen again? Is it happening now? And, of course, those of you who listened to our last hour heard Barry Shamish, who is a Jewish patriot. I love Jerry, but Barry, but he is not a believer at all. Doesn't believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's a Jew. He loves Judaism. He loves the Jewish people. But the idea that there is anything supernatural out there, that there really are spiritual forces, is so foreign to him. And yet he's written a book about the return of the giants, because, of course, 12, 14 years ago, he had done a series of articles and then written a book on the supernatural phenomena that had taken place in Israel, which in many respects will go right along with what we're going to be talking to our guest about tonight. Because, of course, I suspect that our guest this evening would be coming from a different point of view, more from the point of view I'm coming from, because it makes the point that when we try to understand what's going on today, and if we try to look at it from a rational point of view, we're going to get into trouble. And if we don't take the Bible as the basis for our belief and the Scriptures as the basis for our belief, then we're really going to get led off onto all sorts of false rabbit trails. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. Marzulli?
It certainly would, and thanks for having me on your show. Really appreciate it.
Well, I'm really pleased to have you on, and I've really enjoyed your book. Why don't you give our listeners a little of your background and how it was that you have written this book, and what you're trying to demonstrate in this latest book.
Sure, I'd love to. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. With the Nephilim Trilogy, which is published by Zondervan, and it took about 5 years to write that, extensive research went into it. It is a novel, obviously. It's fiction. The characters are all fictional, but they're based on different... Some of the characters are actually composite of different people that I interviewed, and I won't get into the particulars of that, but suffice it to say that they are a composite. Many of the characters are composite. Some of the characters are just out of my head to use the characters to try to convey a message. What's interesting, having written the three novels and this one treatise, the new book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, which of course is nonfiction, it's much more difficult to write a novel, simply because you've got not only all the research, but now you've got to get characters and a plot line and rabbit trails and chases and all this stuff to hook readers in, whereas a treatise, you're just going and getting the information and laying it down in a fashion and a way that people can assimilate. But the reason why I wrote Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural was I really wanted to get this information in a non-fiction text, because I felt I had done so much research on the Nephilim Trilogy, and that many readers would not read fiction because they just kind of poo-pooed it. So based on that, I wanted to reach a greater audience, and I felt I had connected some dots since the last book came out, which is 3 years ago. So I really put all my effort into this book, and I think it connects a lot of dots.
Hold that thought right there, please. All right, fine. Well, our guest is Al Marzulli. How should we refer to you as?
You can just call me Lynn, that's fine.
All right, Lynn, okay, Lynn. Lynn has written a fascinating book. And, of course, you know, when you begin talking about the supernatural today, people, their eyes glaze over. But why should they? If you really believe in the Bible, there are all sorts of supernatural things that took place there. Certainly, I mean, tell me that a virgin birth isn't supernatural, or the idea that somebody could be crucified and come back to life.
Exactly.
Boy, talk about the supernatural, and yet I believe this. It's the fundamental, the very faith that I hold. It's the very essence of who I am. And I think every Christian should question, if you don't believe in those things, then you don't believe in Christianity, which is based upon the supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
Go right ahead, Lynn.
Absolutely. I find there's a quote that's actually used all through the book, and I keep bringing people, the reader, back to the quote. Present political landscape is in direct correlation to supernatural events that happened in some cases millennia ago. And, well, of course, what I mean by that is that in this country, and you just said it very succinctly, in this country we celebrate Christmas, a national holiday, based on the events of something that happened to a man 2,000 years ago, i.e. the virgin birth. And most people in this country believe in that. That is an unbelievable supernatural event. I mean, that thing is off the charts. It's the only time in all of history that that has happened. And, of course, there's prophecy which links that and makes it even of greater importance, in my opinion. Prophecy talking about, you know, behold, you know, the virgin will conceive and that, and his son will be named Emmanuel. So we've got the prophecy written thousands of years before the event, and then the event takes place, and our country, the United States of America, for the most part, celebrates that supernatural event, and it's a national holiday. So our political landscape today is in direct correlation to those supernatural events, specifically in this country, the birth of Jesus, and of course, later on, the death and resurrection of Jesus. Again, how much more supernatural do you want to get? Our whole country is based upon supernatural events that happen. Other countries that are on the face of the earth today and functioning are based also on supernatural events that happened to their prophets, their seers, and they may have a completely different worldview than we do, and of course that, in my opinion, is why we have all the unbelievable tension in the Middle East. We have two different supernatural events kind of colliding, that of Islam and that of Judaism, and for instance, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, has sworn to wipe Israel off the map. So with that kind of vitriol happening, and we have the ancient prophecies of Ezekiel 38 and 39
Hold on, then we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lynn is certainly pointing out that the very essence of our country, the United States, is based upon a belief in the supernatural. I mean, we celebrate Christmas, and of course we celebrate Christmas, which is the story of the virgin birth of a man who is born to a virgin, and of course we celebrate Easter, the death and resurrection of that man. It's an important part of the very essence of what the United States is the belief in the supernatural birth and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And just as certainly in the in the Middle East and in the Near East with the Muslim faith, I mean, they have their beliefs in the supernatural capability of certainly of Muhammad. So there are many religions that have a belief in the supernatural, so we cannot scoff at them if we pretend to be believers, and we can believe that our supernatural beliefs are accurate and the other religions are false, which I happen to believe, you know.
Likewise.
Although this doesn't mean that they didn't happen, that something supernatural didn't happen.
Correct.
It's only how they happened to happen. So you pick up this story there, Lynn.
Well, it's for instance, like Israel, present day Israel celebrates the Passover, a 4,000 year event that happened to the Israelis when they were in bondage with Egypt. And of course, what's just unbelievable about that is the angel of death passed over the firstborn of the Israelites and killed the firstborn of the Egyptians. And this was the event, as those of us who study and travel in biblical studies realize, that this was the event that finally loosened Pharaoh's grip on the Israelites and let them go. So this is an unbelievable supernatural event that happened thousands of years ago, and yet every Passover the Jews celebrate this. So it's part of their culture, it's part of the national pulse of every Jew on the planet. Whether religious or not, they celebrate it. Whether they believe in, you know, the coming Messiah or not, they celebrate the Passover. And of course, Israel today, being established in 1948, back in the homeland, in my opinion, fulfills ancient prophetic texts, which says very specifically that in the latter days, Israel would be gathered from the four corners of the earth and reestablished in their homeland. Again, we're looking at supernatural texts written thousands of years ago, which of course begs the question, who wrote these things? How could they possibly know? And why does this prophecy, biblical prophecy, differ from, let's say, the prophecy of Nostradamus or Gene Dixon or Edgar Cayce? And in my opinion, the prophecy of the Bible, and this is why I kind of, you know, cast my chips into that game and believe in that, because it's written over thousands of years by different authors with no collusion. So, you know, one prophet over here lived 500 years before this prophet, and yet the prophecies dovetail together with 100% accuracy, 100% of the time, and there's no vagueness. Specifically, like with Nostradamus, he'll say, "Hister." And so people who listen or, you know, read Nostradamus and travel in Nostradamus look at that and go, "Ah, he's so close. He said Hister," believing, of course, it was Hitler. Well, the guy's off by two letters. I mean, how accurate is that? Hister can be anybody. I mean, you know, try Googling Hister on Google and see what comes up. Not a whole lot. Hitler, everything comes up. So the point I'm trying to make is that Nostradamus was wrong, whereas Bible prophecy is very, very precise. For instance, a person recently asked me, can you point to something that's happened in prophetically in recent times? And I said, of course I can. And I take him to Matthew chapter 24, or Luke 21, where it says specifically that the Jerusalem will be trodden down by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are over. What, of course, is incredible about that prophecy, when Titus razed the city in A.D. 70, wiping out over a million inhabitants in Jerusalem and casting the rest of them to the four corners of the earth, starting the diaspora, Jerusalem literally was in control of non-Jews, the Gentiles, for almost 2,000 years, until the War of 67, when the Israelis finally took back the old city. This, in my opinion, ends that time period. Jerusalem will be trampled by the times of the Gentiles until that time is over. And this, of course, I believe, starts some sort of a prophetic clock. And how long we have, I don't know. But I believe, going back into the prophecy, that the next prophetic event we will see is Ezekiel 38 and 39, the fulfillment of that prophecy, where a confederacy of nations goes against this current state, this current land of unwalled villages, which in itself is an unbelievable prophetic utterance, because in the ancient world there was no such thing as a land of unwalled villages. And yet we see 2,500 years ago Ezekiel being very precise in telling us that in the latter days, in the end times, this confederacy of nations will come up against a land of unwalled villages, and of course Israel responds, as the rest of the text says, I believe, with a nuclear exchange. And I believe this singular event will probably trigger some sort of supernatural events that are talked about in 2 Thessalonians. This, of course, is all in my new book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. If you want to, actually, Amazon is completely sold out, which is wonderful. But the best place to get it is on my website, which is a spiral, like a spiral staircase, spiraloflife.com.
And of course, actually, it's produced by our good friend Tom Horn, and I'm just so glad to see that Tom, who is basically an evangelical Christian minister, who now is doing publishing, and he has a website called Raiders website, but he's publishing books of this sort, and we've had Tom on many times as a guest. And I'm so glad that we've got a responsible Christian publisher who's putting out good books that are covering the things that are happening today and the supernatural events that are happening. And until people begin understanding that there is this other dimension, and of course we are going to see, and we are seeing in our lifetime, the unfolding of these truly supernatural events. I certainly concur with exactly what you're saying. We are privileged to live in these times, the most dangerous, most frightening, most exciting times really in 2,000 years.
I agree completely. Definitely. It's one point that I'm asked by readers and people who email me is, why doesn't the media cover some of these things? If they're happening so regularly, why doesn't our media cover them? Well, let's take, for instance, several weeks ago, a mile-wide UFO was spotted in the English Channel by two airplane pilots in different airplanes. So you've got points of congruence, essentially, two different pilots seeing the same thing. This thing was a mile wide over the English Channel. Last week, another very large craft was sighted over the mainland of England by a group of people. So it just wasn't one or two witnesses. There was like at least a dozen, possibly more, that saw the same another mile-wide UFO craft hovering over the sky. And here's the deal. If our media latches onto this thing and doesn't treat it with kind of kid gloves or what it's been doing, they just kind of write some silly story about it and they treat it very lightly and make it kind of a fluff piece or pass off as anybody who would really believe in this stuff is a little wacky. And that's what they do, because if they actually treat it seriously and take our eyes away from the pablum that they feed us, for instance, Paris Hilton nonsense that's been happening, or Britney shaving her head, or whatever silly nonsense that they're throwing up for us. I mean, here, in my opinion, is an earth-shattering event. You've got a mile-wide UFO. What is it doing? Who's in it? Where did it come from? This is worldview-changing manifestations happening in our space-time continuum, and yet our media just gives it a cursory nod or pokes fun at it. And I found something really interesting. Several weeks back on the Larry King show, there was a panel of ufologists, and of course they had one skeptic, and Buzz Aldrin was there telling us that he never saw anything and it was just space junk. And I forget the skeptic's name. He was on there, and he wouldn't believe in anything. Anytime someone would come up with a preponderance of evidence, including Jesse Marcel's son, Jesse Marcel Jr., who was there, who actually allegedly handled some of the records from the 1947 spacecraft crash in Roswell, New Mexico. And Marcel just said, look, I handled the stuff. It wasn't of this world. I've never seen anything like it before or since. And, of course, the skeptic has, well, you were young. You were only 11. And he won't believe anything. But what I found really interesting in this panel of men was the former governor of Arizona was on.
They actually had it this weekend. I actually saw the same thing around the headland. It was fascinating. The former governor of Arizona said, I saw this, and there's this fellow over there from the military. Oh, well, I mean, you imagine all sorts of things, you know.
Right.
That guy was there. He was there to discredit anybody who wanted to suggest there's something supernatural, because they do not dare let the American people or the people of the world understand there is another dimension. Go right ahead, Lynn.
And the moment, of course, they do that, everyone has to shift their worldview.
Right.
And then all of a sudden things like prophecy and how you deal with the supernatural becomes of great import. But getting back to the story, what I found fascinating is this former governor of Arizona got on the air, and the first thing he does is he apologizes to his former constituency, because when the Phoenix Lights happened, and he was governor of Arizona at the time, he went on, and I actually saw the broadcast, and they had a guy dressed up in a little gray alien suit come running out on stage, and they just made a laughing stock of the whole article. This is a joke. This is ridiculous. He apologized for that, and then he went on to say that he was in Phoenix at the time, and he actually saw the craft, and it was not of this world. And for him to, to have the guts to come out and say that, I thought was just incredible.
Well, they rebroadcasted this weekend. I never watched television, but I was away, and so I did turn on, and it's
there
amazing
was.
How sometimes God takes you to that, and I saw the replay of that, interview with Larry King this last weekend, replaying something that had been before, and here's the ex-governor saying, I saw it. It was real. We'll go right ahead, Lynn. Go right ahead.
Okay, great. So, you know, we have something, an event like that, and it begs the question, where and who, what, how, who's making this stuff, where is it coming from, who's behind it, are they malevolent or benevolent, good or evil, what messages are they sending? Several weeks ago, there was a crop circle that was formed in England, and what makes this crop circle unique, the field was actually staked out. Now, the reason why these guys staked it out, they had infrared cameras, they staked out the field because several years earlier, there had been a crop circle in that field, and they just had a feeling like, let's try it again, maybe we'll get lucky, and they were. They hit pay dirt. Around 3:30 in the morning, there was a flash over the field. 20 minutes later, when it started to get light, because remember, England is in a higher latitude than we are, let's say, in the States, so they get more of the land of the midnight sun type of lighting and during the summer months. So around 4:15, 4:00 in the morning, whatever, it got light enough to see, and they saw below them in the field this pristine crop circle. And again, it begs the question, who or what is making this stuff, and why are they making it?
Yeah, because some of these are such elaborate designs. You know, you can see them from 10,000 feet, but there's no way you can put those things on the ground. I just run around in circles. These are, and I read the occult literature, Cher magazine, mm-hmm. put out by Benjamin Krem, and they're all the time talking about these crop circles as these supernatural manifestations of the other dimension, which they are part of and representing.
And I completely concur with that statement. I believe that it's all part of the end time mix. It's all part of the coming great deception, which, for the most part, unless you're spirit-filled, and I really mean this, unless you're spirit-filled and you're walking with a living God, most likely you will be deceived. You'll believe a lie. I mean, it says very specifically that the deception will be so great that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. But whatever is coming, again, you know, there's another scripture that says that men fear for what is coming on the earth. 2 Thessalonians says that that Satan comes with all lying wonders. All signs and lying wonders. So what is coming on the earth, in my opinion, the church, for the most part, is asleep. Most people have no clue. And it says in that same passage in 2 Thessalonians that God sends them this delusion because they did not believe the truth. What's the truth? Well, being born again is the truth. That Jesus died for us, that's the truth. That this man did and was crucified 2,000 years ago, this horrible, unbelievable scourging that he went through, the crucifixion, and of course, 3 days later, the resurrection. By the way, I've been studying some recent material on the shroud, which, again, the supernatural, and recent studies have shown several things. One, that the carbon dating was actually taken from the area of the patch that was sewn into the shroud after the 14th century fire. And this, of course, skews the carbon dating. What's interesting is you can take part of the shroud that has the holographic image of the body of Jesus on it, and you can just take a small sample of that, and from that you can recreate the whole holograph. And what's really interesting, this is why it's not a painting, and whatever process made the shroud is so far to us unknown. It's beyond anything that we've seen.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment with Lynn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lynn was just saying that he's been studying the shroud, among other things, and obviously Lynn is a believer, and he believes that this what we're seeing on the shroud is a hologram of some sort, and he points out that with the carbon dating that was been utilized to discredit the shroud, the carbon came from an area that was involved in a fire. What was the 1500s, something like that?
That's correct, yes.
So it really would not be accurate at all, but you go ahead with the story.
What's interesting is when you look at the shroud and you take a photograph of it, the first thing you realize is that the negative of the photograph, I'm not talking digital film now, this is several years back, but you would take a photograph of the shroud, but negative is actually the positive image. And of course, when they did this, And I think in the 30s, they were just, or the 1917, 20, right around in there, they were just, the photographer couldn't believe what he was looking at. And this caused a great sensation throughout the world. But what happened later is scientists recently realized that they were looking at a holographic image. And when they would reproduce the holographic image, they would see the entire body, both front and back, without any of the blood stains from the shroud. Let me elaborate. When you take a photograph of the shroud, the blood stains that are specifically in the arm, flowing from the wrists because the hands were suspended, right? So the blood stains are on the forearms, and they literally obliterate the forearms. In other words, when you take that picture of the shroud, you see the hands folded and the shoulders, but you don't see the forearms in the pictures. It's not there. No matter how you develop it, it's not there. When the scientists discovered that there was holographic information on the shroud, when they reproduced the holograph, guess what? The arms were there without the blood stains, so you see the forearms. So this proves, in my opinion, conclusively, that what we're looking at is definitely not a forgery. It's not a painting. I like to call it God's calling card. It's like, you know, this is what my son went through, and what's incredible is you can literally see the scourge marks, over 120 lash marks on the body. I mean, this guy was literally eviscerated. The figure on the shroud, which of course I believe is Yeshua, Jesus, was literally eviscerated. And what's really interesting is with the whipping, the scourging, he deliberately avoided the area around the heart, knowing that if they did that, they would kill him almost instantly. So he's marked from the neck down all over his body. And another reason why it could not possibly be a forgery is in the holographic imagery, you actually see the scourge marks curve and follow the curvature of the muscles, the curvature of the legs and of the calves. So it's, once again, to me, it's a supernatural phenomena which we have, and it's there for anyone who wants to look at it. Recently, in 2005, this information was let out, and of course the media, well, in their mind, it's carbon dated, science can't make a mistake, and this is it. So no one's really been talking about it, but I find it just interesting. And of course, to me, it doesn't change my faith. It's not the basis of my faith, but I just love it. I love the fact that, wow, the Lord left a calling card, and it really shows in graphic detail what he went through, very similar to what Gibson did in The Passion of the Christ.
Well, I think that there's so much here that demonstrate that there really are supernatural events that have occurred not only in the past, but have occurred in our lifetime, and that are still occurring today. And I think that we're going to see a lot more supernatural events. And so I'm just going to let you go ahead and pick up the story.
Sure. Another supernatural event that I write about in the book, which I interviewed several people for, which is the Mothman prophecies. And something very bizarre happened in a small little town called Point Pleasant, West Virginia, 1966, 1967.
Now, I'd never heard of the Mothman, so tell us about that, because sure. I was fascinated to read about it.
Well, the story goes like this. In 66, 67, this group of teenagers, they were actually married, and they were out in the car in this area called, which then was called the TNT area. The TNT area was this large amount of acreage, which during World War II was used to create TNT. It was a munitions plant. Kind of a creepy place. I've seen pictures of it. There are these old stone cement Quonset huts. Some of them are still there. But at the time, in 66, 67, this place was, for the most part, abandoned. And these guys are driving around up there, and they see this figure who, at first, they weren't sure what they were looking at, but the figure had wings. And it looked like it was a man with these very large wings on it. And the creature just opened up its wings and took off. Well, these guys were completely terrified. Completely terrified.
I think I'd be terrified myself.
No kidding. And they were in the car, and they sped back to town at 100 miles an hour. And this thing flew over the top of the car. And its wings would actually hit the doors.
We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stanton back here. Our guest is Lynn Marzulli. Marzulli, go ahead, Lynn, and telling us the story of the Mothman. Go ahead.
Sure. So these four young adults are in the Carver doing well over 100 miles an hour. One of the witnesses said they were up at one point about 105 to 110 miles an hour. And whatever this creature is, it's keeping up with it. They go back to town. They run right to the police. They tell the police. The women are literally taken to a hospital and treated for shock. Well, the town gets wind of this thing, and you know, even then, the skeptics are coming out of the woodwork, and a professor comes by at the town and says, well, it's just a very large sandhill crane. And the media has a field day with this thing. But the witnesses will not change their story, and they're adamant about it. And pick up the research. For me, some of these people, it's now decades later, their lives have been ruined. It's been a long, slow, steady decline for some of these people. The people who originally saw this husband and wife team, or husband and wife couple, I should say, were divorced shortly afterwards, and their lives have been sort of a train wreck. The man has never gone on the record telling his side of the story. He's adamantly refused to talk to anybody about it. But other witnesses saw this thing, upwards of over 100. And in my opinion, what we were looking at this particular time, in my guesstimation, is the manifestation of a fallen angel. And why there, why that time, I can't answer that. Something was open. This thing came through. There could have been more than one. There was also, at the same period of time, massive UFO sightings all over the place. Also, the mysterious Men in Black that we had the silly movie several years ago that pokes fun of it again. But real Men in Black was seen by hundreds of town people. And you can talk to these people. The witnesses are still alive, and you know, they'll basically tell you what they saw. What was interesting in my research, that everyone who saw this thing was terrified of it. They were frozen in fear, literally frozen in fear. They were terrified of the apparition that they were seeing. No one had any defense against it except to flee, to run. Oftentimes, people were mesmerized by the eyes. Some people said they were slanted like the black eyes of a gray alien. Other people said they were red. But whatever they were hypnotic, and people were just literally terrified, unable to move, petrified, and lingered in fear. The fear and the dread would linger for days on end. Enter the story of one man who did
right,
not...
Hold that story. Good. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Lynn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lynn is telling the story of the Mothman. And Mothman, and he was seen, what was he, early 60s, mid-60s?
Yeah, 66 to 67.
All right, and Chris, here it is, this creature, it's a large, giant sort of creature with wings, and manifest to many, many people. Many people saw it, and of course, Lynn had an opportunity years later to interview them, and sometimes the eyes were described as slanted, and other times they were red, and everybody who saw him was terrified. This was a supernatural being, creature of some sort. And what part of the country was this actually
in? This was in West Virginia.
Is this written up on the Internet at all?
It is. If you go mothman.com, up will come all sorts of things.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, but you say there was one man who was not terrified.
One man was not terrified, and the story goes to his own account. And he never went on the record till fairly recently. He kept it to himself, didn't seek reporters. The man was a retired missionary. He had been in New Guinea, I believe, for about 8 years as a missionary. And there in New Guinea, he was subjected to supernatural entities that apparently manifested to the local tribespeople, a lot of shamanism, a lot of witchcraft. And so he was sort of familiar with these sort of entities. But back in West Virginia, he wasn't expecting to run into this sort of thing. And what happened was, according to his story, he's coming home one night, and he just senses something around the house that he was living in. He goes inside, he checks every room, goes down to the cellar and looks down there. So he's obviously unnerved about something, not sure what it is. He and his wife retire for the evening around 9:30, 10 o'clock, and he goes to sleep. Later on that night, he's awakened for some reason, and he looks out the window, and as he takes his eyes and gazes back into the bedroom, there at the foot of his bed is this creature, what they nicknamed the Mothman. And he saw the wings and was literally frozen in fear for about 45 seconds. This is what makes his story unique. After that period of time, he began to recite Bible verses. And when he did that, he describes it that as he would recite those Bible verses, it was like a gunshot. It was like a slug hitting the apparition or whatever this thing was. And the thing slowly began to dissipate and finally left. And what it is to me, it's literally spiritual warfare 101. You know, we're told in Scripture, specifically in Ephesians, that our weapons are not carnal, and that the sword of the Spirit is the Word of God, which, by the way, is our only offensive weapon, is the sword of the Spirit. And what is the sword of the Spirit? It's the Word of God. Paul tells us what it is. What did this man use? He used the sword of the Spirit. He used the Word of God. And that Word of God was in him because, he's a born-again Christian, Bible-reading man, loves the Scriptures, loves the Lord. So the Scriptures were in him, very much like Jesus. When Jesus is tempted in the wilderness, he goes up against the enemy by quoting Scripture to him. He uses the sword of the Spirit. So there's two instances. I just find that just incredible that this man was the only person I've been able to find that had essentially victory over the Mothman, was a retired missionary who used the sword of the Spirit, i.e. the Word of God, and was able to get victory over this creature.
But of course the thing is that these are real demonic manifestations, and there's nothing we can do on our own to stand against them.
Mm-hmm.
But of course if we're Christians and we call upon the Lord and His power, and of course these beings would hate the Scriptures, and would hate to have the Word of the Lord mentioned and call on the Spirit of the Lord, because through the Spirit of the Lord we can accomplish great things. Independently we can accomplish absolutely nothing against these demonic beings.
And that's exactly what my research showed me, that everybody, and there were clergy in the town at the time, and this is unfortunately not to their honor, but the clergy wondered if these guys were on drugs or drinking, and so the clergy really didn't come forward and say what we're looking at may be a supernatural entity and we need to pray and fast and rid our town of that. The clergy never did that. Instead, they just poo-pooed it. So in my opinion, these guys were completely asleep at the wheel, and except for this missionary who, as I said before, was able to gain victory over it by using the sword of the Spirit. So I write about the Mothman specifically in the new book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. It of course, is under the supernatural part to try to instill in the reader the sense that supernatural events are happening in our space-time continuum. How, as people, whether Christian or not, how do we discern whether these are benevolent or malevolent, whether they're good or evil? What litmus test do we use? And of course, from my worldview, it's the Bible. The Bible is our litmus test. But you have to know it, and you have to know how it ties together. And we, as Christians, of course, should be schooled in that. I feel the church at large, for the most part, and I'm broad brushing here and I realize that, is fairly asleep when it comes to scriptures like the Genesis 6 scriptures with the Nephilim and the return of the Nephilim and UFOs passages like 2 Thessalonians. And for the most part, I think the church is asleep when it comes to these topics, and yet we see all around us, I believe, the stage is set for something incredible happening in the Middle East, which will then trigger some of these supernatural events that have been teasing us, like the crop circles, the cattle mutilations, Mothman, UFOs. I believe they're all demonic. I believe they're all from the same source. They're all Luciferian. But the end game that this guy's got in store for us is really unbelievable. One of the things I researched extensively were the Fatima apparitions in 1917. And I really think that there's almost a prototype for the Fatima, or what happened in Fatima in 1917, is sort of a harbinger of what's to come on the earth after the Ezekiel War of 38 and 39 triggers supernatural events. And of course, in 1917, what I'm speaking about is the apparition that was attributed to the Mary of the Bible, which of course I don't think it was had anything to do with the Mary of the Bible.
Well, of course, you know, many of our Catholic listeners would certainly, you know, this is an important element of their faith. And I think you handle it very nicely in your book, where you say you don't want to insult them, but they want to look objectively at what happened. What happened was a supernatural event that was witnessed by, what, 50,000 people, something like that?
70,000 people were standing in the field that day.
And because it's a supernatural event, the question is interpretation. Was this of God, or was it of some other sinister force out there? I'll let you handle it, but I think that you try to be respectful of the people's faith, but you question not that something happened, not that it was supernatural, but of course, was it of God, or was it of another source misleading people? So pick the story up.
Yeah, and I like, and my caveat again, and thank you for reminding me of it, is that I'm not here to bash Catholicism or bash what people might believe in the Fatima apparitions. I'm just saying that my research and the books that I've read lead me to different conclusions. And what if this thing was a harbinger of the deception to come? There are priests that were there at the time who weren't so sure and weren't ready to embrace this thing. In fact, some priests went on the record believing that this thing was a demonic manifestation.
But of course, the church, official church, has said this was, this was a Virgin Mary, that
yes,
a Virgin Mary was behind this. But I think that this was witnessed by so many people, and yet there were some people over there who said, what is this really all about? Not that it wasn't real, but what was it? Go ahead.
Well, here's the stage. 70,000 people were in that field in Fatima, Portugal that day. They were there because the three seers had a sign from the apparition saying, I'll show you a sign at 12 o'clock on the 13th, and so of October. And interesting, it was she chose the 13th, but that's a whole different sidebar. But 70,000 people had gathered in that field that day. There were clergy, there were peasants, bakers, candlestick makers, the entire media of the day were there, photographers, atheists, clergy. Everyone's gathered in the field awaiting whatever was going to happen, whatever this sign was going to be. And it had been raining all morning, and so people were sopping wet, and the field was very muddy. 12 o'clock came and went, nothing happened. Around 1 o'clock, the seers see something, and they say, there she is, here she's coming. Now, only they could see this ball of light, which apparently came down from the heavens and settled over this oak tree where they were kneeling. Then the miracle, which is later called the miracle of the sun by the church and other people, and what they saw, the clouds parted, and people began to look at the sun, or at least what they thought was the sun, and the sun descended onto the crowd, which, of course, caused many of the onlookers to fall to their knees, and chaos ensued. They didn't know it was the end of the world or not. And when this, whatever this object was, lifted off of them and ascended back into the heavens, they found that the rain had stopped and everyone's clothes were dry, and some healings had taken place. So truly a supernatural event had happened. But when you go back into the record and you read the eyewitness accounts of that day and what happened, you find a totally different, or let's put it this way, you find some different and very interesting observations. And I'm just going to read a couple from you. This is from a book called Heavenly Lights by Fernandez and D'Armada. Here's a direct quote. In a radiant sky, the sun can be looked at straight on and with eyes wide open without blinking, as if we were looking at a disc of polished glass illuminated from behind. The sun gave the appearance of a globe of dull silver. Here's another one, I saw a very clear silvery blue disc. Here's another witness. A plate of gleaming silver, the silver sun wrapped up in the same light. It was like a ball of snow. Here's another one. I saw the sun seeming a dull silver disc, but more luminous than the moon. And, of course, the point that they're trying to make here is that in 1917, there was no word for, like, nothing in the lexicon back then like we have, like UFO or flying saucer. Those words didn't come about until the 50s. So these people who were standing in that field saw an object that was like the sun, that was in fact in front of the sun, and in fact was disc-like and dull and silver-looking. You know, I believe if you and I were in that field, we would have said, oh, look, there's a UFO, or there's a flying saucer. So what's interesting is, like, witness after witness in these books, and this is on the record. I mean, people can go and do their own research and find that it's not a ruse. The record is what it is. And this is eyewitness accounts, and they're saying a silver disc. So, of course, I believe that this is a dry run. This is what's coming. This is part of a deception. And the reason why I take such great pains to talk about it in my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, is I believe that the 70,000 people who witnessed this event in 1917, those folks, their worldview was changed in an instant. And so today, can you imagine, let's say the Ezekiel 38-39 war actually happens in the Middle East and Israel responds with a neutron bomb? What if that's the trigger for the supernatural? What if we wake up in the morning and over the cities of the world we see mile-wide UFOs just sitting there? And the reason why I used the mile-wide one is because that was recently, as we talked about earlier in the show, spotted over the English Channel. What if we see these things? And how is that going to change everyone's worldview? And, of course, I believe everyone's worldview would change instantly. People would have to rethink everything. And unless you're, and as I said before, unless you're a Bible-believing, born-again Christian, people will be deceived. They will believe the lie that Second Thessalonians warned us about.
And I certainly think you're absolutely right. And I certainly appreciated the point that you made out that, you know, you have to have some basis for what you believe. I mean, because if things just do not make sense, I mean, then how do you deal with them? Well, there can always be the person who says that, you know, these are creatures from outer space. They're here, of course, to offer us peace or prosperity. And, of course, I don't think this is at all. I think these are demonic manifestations of the other dimension. But believe me, there are those who want to convince us they're from the other planet. We're going to have to give up our freedom, or I don't know what the scenario is going to be, but they have a plan. They have a master plan, and they know just how to manipulate us. And we actually have, in my estimation, human beings, and if you read the material we put out on this, who are actually in contact with the spiritual hierarchy, these spiritual beings from the other dimension, who they are. I will not venture to say, although you can read my material on this, on the occult hierarchy pamphlets, but these are real people, but they are manifestations of the other dimension. We're in contact with these beings, and certainly Malachi Martin has a wonderful book, and it's called Hostage to the Devil, talking about five exorcisms and the demonic spirits that actually inhabited these people. Do you know Malachi Martin's material?
I read that book. Very interesting. Fascinating book.
That was one of the things that really began to change my whole worldview.
Fascinating book.
Well, your book is fascinating as well.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
And, you obviously have done a great deal of work here. And, of course, you've got, what about the abduction phenomenon?
Well, to me, again, the abduction phenomena mirrors what happened in Genesis 6. And most of your listeners, I'm assuming, especially having Tom Horn on and Patty Heron, but knowing that the Genesis 6 account of the sons of God, the B'nai Elohim, which are always angels, doesn't differentiate between the good or the bad guys, but nonetheless, they are angels, and they come to Earth, they grab whoever they want to for females, and take wives, and go into them, and what is born, of course, is the Nephilim, fallen ones, which I believe is the reason for the flood. The Book of Enoch says very specifically, and actually expounds on the Genesis account, of who the angels were, where they touched down, what they did, some of the accounts, what they taught, what the trade was, that there was an actual trade between the people of the earth, the men, and the men were given technology, and the so-called fallen angels were given access to the population. There was a breeding program that was happening then, and that's exactly very close to what we see in the current abduction phenomena. We see this grabbing of the women, impregnating them against their will. In the third month, the baby, the child, is taken from them, often raised. Sometimes years go by before the mother will see the child again. It often looks, well, it's very hybrid-looking, sometimes with slanted eyes and stringy hair. But according to my research, the hybrids are looking more and more human. So the genetic plan, the genetic experiment, seems to be working. It seems to be getting towards the end game. And, of course, I believe that end game is the spawn of Satan, i.e. it will be a Nephilim, and it will be a hybrid. It will be a fallen angel.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment. Whit Lynn, my Zulie. Well, Lynn, I want you to go ahead and get your book out, your website, so people would know how to get your book.
Sure, thanks. I appreciate that. It's www.spiral, like a spiral staircase, Spiral of Life, L-I-F-E, spiraloflife.com, and we're lower than Amazon, and you'll get an autographed copy and peruse the website. You can also sign up for a monthly newsletter where I go into politics, prophecy, and the supernatural and keep everyone abreast to current events and all of those areas and how they may be linking and tying together. So www.spiral, like a spiral staircase, spiraloflife.com.
Well, I'm amazed, though, that Amazon would already be sold out of your book. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, it hit, it got down to the low three figures, and then they ran out of books. So that's where I know Tom and Anomalos are shipping more to Amazon ASAP, but they haven't gotten them yet.
And of course, just sitting there, good people, this is Tom Horn, who's been a personal friend of ours for some years, since actually he was a minister, and we read, we actually carry a couple of his books still, The Spiritual the Warfare and Gods Who Walk Among Us.
Great books, by the way.
And of course, then he's got this the great, actually, this new book. What's the title of that one?
It's the 2012 book, Nephilim Stargates.
Oh, no, he's got another one. It's this is the one that goes into the cloning of human beings. Mm-hmm. Anyway, well, we actually carry that one as well. Anyway, I want to. In fact, I would love to get you back on. We actually do a number of other programs. We have four different audiences every week. I'd like to hear them all your story. I think
I'd love to come on, Dr. Stan. It'd be great.
I mean, I think you have a lot of offer.
I appreciate that.
Are you working or are you doing this full time?
Yes and no. I'm also a full time pastor. I'm a worship pastor up at a church, and that keeps me pretty busy. But I'm researching another book right now and getting ready to start to jump into that.
All right, fine. Well, I'm sure being a full-time pastor and being a writer and a researcher, but it's so important because, in my estimation, the church is not preparing the people for what I fear. In some ways I fear, in some ways I'm so excited knowing what lies ahead.
Mm.
What I want to think.
And I think programs like yours, sir, and authors like Tom and myself and Patty Heron and David Flynn, Mike Heiser, just to name a few. I think that God in this time has called a group of us to literally be watchmen and to sound the shofar, sound the warning.
God bless. We're out of time. Thanks very much, Lynn.
All right, Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you've enjoyed our program this evening. This is a very unusual program. Lynn is actually a minister. He has a church in Southern California. But as he said, he feels called by God, along with Tom Horn and the others, to try to get this information out. God's people are not prepared for this message, and they're not prepared for the supernatural events, which I think are going to be coming down the line. And so, we're probably going to be carrying his books and some of the other books that are actually put out through Tom and the other sources. we want at least our listeners to be able and be prepared as these supernatural events do take place. Well, first of all, if you'd like, of course, to get the material put out by Tom Horn, his books are Supernatural Warfare and, of course, The Gods Who Walk Among Us. And then he has one, and his name escapes me right now. It's something like the Ahriman Gate. It really goes into this genetic breeding that they're doing at the present time. And fascinating material. Another thing you need to understand, there are people who are just trying to change the very nature of mankind. And so we hope that you'll give us a call if you'd be interested in getting Lynn's book. Why, we will be carrying it here at Radio Liberty, and it's called Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And then, of course, we carry certainly the book by Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil. You can actually get our 4-tape set with Malachi. It's called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and if you get that along with the book, why, of course, there's a special consideration given. We carry the book by Johanna Michelson, entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil, and she was a medium. And she was actually being trained to become a psychic surgeon, and she participated in 400 psychic operations where people were cured of incurable cancers. They were able actually to reach inside the body and take out these cancers without making an incision in the skin. What madness is this? Well, Johanna originally was fascinated by what she was seeing until she realized that this was all demonic. And, of course, she eventually, denounced and gave up her gift as a medium. But her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, and, of course, our four-tape sets, we have a four-tape set called The Supernatural. You need to understand what we're up against. We don't want you to become obsessed with it. But if you come into contact with these beings, you're going to have to know how to deal with them. You can either be terrified, or you can call upon God's word. And I'll never forget one time when I was going to be giving a talk, and I just felt this terrible oppression all day long. I was going to be giving it at the church, and when I told my minister what has happened, he said, "Well, you're just coming into demonic attack." And he explained to me how you could call upon the body and blood of Jesus Christ and to command the devils to leave you alone. And when we prayed that prayer, of course, that demonic oppression left me. And a few times in my life, I've actually had that same sense of being under demonic oppression. And you need to learn how to call upon the Lord as well. If you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord, you sure better think seriously about getting it. And if you'd like to talk to me on the air, off the air about this, we'd be glad to talk to you. But basically, it's a matter of getting down on your knees and asking Jesus Christ, the person, to come into your life and take hold of you, because it is the only protection that you or your family are going to have for the very, very difficult times that lie ahead. We're involved in the spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com, and Lynn's book is Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
questions. There are many people asking why. There are many people paying attention. There are many now who see the big lie. There are many.
Wow, the big lie keeps growing. More in-your-face lies today, if you've been at all aware of what's happening in the media today. It's just beyond what we ever thought we would see in this country, what they are thinking that we will accept. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Dave Von Kleist will be joining us in this next hour. Very successful meeting at the 9/11 conference. More questions, more questions. And yet today in the news, of course, if you watched over the weekend, it was the bridge, the bridge, the bridge war, bridge, bridge, bridge war. And today, it is such stupid information that the wag the dog scenario grows almost on a daily basis. I do thank you for joining us today, and we're going to try to make sense of this, because I heard probably the most shocking story that I was not expecting on Monday morning, and I just stood in my tracks and thought, I don't believe I'm hearing this. Well, we'll talk about this in this hour. And among other news, Adam Gadon, he's the phony, all CIA, duh, or all CIA, duh, spokesperson, the American Al-Qaeda. He wants to bomb embassies. He wants to go create all kinds of havoc and get back at the Americans. And CNN says, well, I really wouldn't take these charges seriously. Who is this guy, and why does he look so phony on television? Well, the bridge story is beyond belief again, as they are saying things such as, well, workers noted that the bridge began shaking while they resurfaced it, and as they resurfaced it, it began to shake more. Wow. You would think one of those people would say, you know, the bridge isn't supposed to be shaking. But no, that's not what happened. This is an amazing story, and it is such a miracle that only five people have been declared dead. I mean, I can't imagine 50 cars going off of a bridge and only five people dead. Well, thank you, God, however it happened, and let's hope that it's true, and let's hope that we're not being fed some kind of phony story. I don't know why we would think that. And over the weekend, if you were watching television, they're running stories about Flight 800, how, well, we got to the bottom of these conspiracy theories, and the BTK killer, and they're focusing on all of the events that have happened on I-35, of course, going up toward the bridge area. And, I mean, a lot of questions are being asked about what is going on here. Well, at the same time, Iraq's power grid looks like it is about ready to collapse. And not because they haven't had enough time and money to fix it. You understand that. It's because it is by design. Also, the United States is becoming a prison country. Some question about a prison that now has a lactating area for mothers. Help us understand that one. Also, there's a question about foot and mouth disease that has been released from a government lab. That happened a while back. All of these, oh, we are so stupid stories. And also, a well-connected drug company obtained anthrax vaccine contracts despite the side effects. More information being released, and contact I had over the weekend shows that a lot more was known than they said. Also, IBM is near a supercomputer contract. Remember, anytime they tell you something that's going to take place, it already has. And I think that there are those of you out there who know that. Then I'm going to give you the most unbelievable story when we get back from this break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Pharmaceutical company. companies, doctors, and hospitals all make money from sick people. So what incentive is there for them to make you well? For thousands of years, man has used spices and herbs to ward off disease and cure, yes, cure illness. It's no wonder the drug manufacturers feel threatened by spices and herbs. The North American Herb and Spice Company manufactures the products that Dr. Cass Ingram has been recommending for years. The Oregacin, Oreganol, and Oregamax are working wonders for people all over the country and can work wonders for you, too. According to the Quarterly Review of Biology published by the University of Chicago, spices like oregano can have a 100% kill rate of bacteria. Protect yourself and your family with the oregano products recommended by Dr. Cass Ingram. Call 877-817-9829 and order your Oregacin, Oreganol, and Oregamax today. That number again is 877-817-9829 or visit thepowerhour.com. Doctors and drugs, or herbs and spices, the choice is yours. Call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowerhour.com.
Is credit card debt making your life stressful? Do you avoid answering the phone in fear of another creditor calling? How would you like to cut your credit card balances by as much as half? Well, now you can. Safeguard Debt Management Services will connect you with a debt management specialist who will negotiate with your creditors to reduce your balances by as much as half. You can consolidate all of your high credit card balances into one monthly payment. Call for a free, no-obligation debt consultation and learn how to get your very own customized debt management program. 1-800-794-4313. Enjoy the financial freedom you've dreamed of, knowing your debt is being handled by professionals. Call now for your free, no-obligation debt consultation. Regardless of your credit history, Safeguard can help. Get the answers you're looking for. The call is free, the consultation is free, and the information could change your life. Call now. 1-800-794-4313. That's 1-800-794-4313.
Oh, what a beautiful day for the beach. Look, up there in the sky. It's Non-X Man. He's in a dive.
He must have found some ugly toenails on the beach.
Let's go look.
I'm Non-X Man, and your toenails need Non-X Nail Gel. Stop hiding them in the sand. Take them out. Let's see.
Ooh. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
Don't worry. Now there's Non-X Nail Gel. Use it on your toenails regularly, and they'll look fantastic when you're barefoot.
Oh, I will, Non-X Man.
Well, I'm off to find more ugly toenails. Don't let Non-X Man find you with unsightly toenails. Buy diabetic-friendly, money-back guaranteed Non-X Nail Gel. It's in the foot care aisle at Supercenters, Walgreens, CVS, Long's, Meijer, Giant Eagle, Car Drug, Snyder's, Duane Reade, Bilo, and Rite Aid.
Hi, everybody. This is Joyce Roddy and Dave Von Kleist. We all know knowledge is power, and this is the Power Hour. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or sponsors of this radio station. I don't know who could disagree with what we're talking about here. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Dave Von Kleist will be joining us in this next hour. Yeah, I got home in the middle of the night again last night after their little trip up to Wisconsin for the 9/11 conference. I'm interested in how many of you watched the debate yesterday on CNN and also on ABC with the presidential candidates in Iowa. Looks like Ron Paul smoked them again. But, of course, they're acting as though, come on, I mean, take him seriously? Of course not. Well, they don't want to take him seriously. Why? Because he is absolutely doing more than they have ever seen a candidate do before. They've never seen anyone take the American people by storm, or the support of the American people by storm, in the manner in which is happening right now. It is so refreshing to see that the people can have an impact, and boy, are they doing it. Well, anyway, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But there's a couple of stories in the news right now that are just beyond belief. And, I mean, I swear that if I were to swear, I would say that everything today could be stupid news. because it is so beyond what we conceive that the government would ever attempt to do. So the American people, the mentality of the American people, have dropped to a new low, obviously. Well, here's the main unthinkable story. And CNN did this with a straight face, just out of the blue. Ladies and gentlemen, the Iraqis are training on U.S. soil. What? The Iraqi military is training on U.S. soil. I thought maybe it was because I was just a little sleepy this morning hearing this, or maybe it was just a dream, but that's exactly what happened. Iraqis are training in U.S. soil on the Pearl River in Mississippi. The Naval Warfare Institute is helping to train these military people. They're out of Coronado, California. Chris Lawrence reported on CNN that from Coronado, California, that these people are, well, they're working out of the military base near Pearl, Mississippi, and they're learning everything that the American Navy learns. And when they finish with that, they go to malls, they go to restaurants, they go everywhere. The Iraqi military is training on U.S. soil. And, to make matters even worse, this is not the first group. This is the second group of Iraqi military people that have trained in the U.S. on U.S. soil. I'd like to hear from somebody in Pearl, Mississippi, near the river in Pearl, Mississippi, or someone in Mississippi who's aware of this. I mean, they're acting as if, what, you didn't know this? Of course. I mean, of course we're training the Iraqi military on U.S. soil. What? They want to help them in the Tigris River. Why don't you take them to the Tigris River then? We got plenty of military over there that can train them. You've got all the money in the world to deal with. I don't know. Is there something I'm missing on this story, or should we be a little bit concerned about bringing in all this foreign military here in the U.S.? What happens when they decide to say, hey, America, we're going to take over your country just like you took over our country? Could it be? I'm still in a state of shock. I'm hoping I still didn't see this story correctly. Other news, Adam Gadahn. You remember Adam Gadahn? Adam Gadahn is that American who supposedly is saying, well, I'm the American Al-Qaeda, and he's really upset at the way the Americans are treating the Muslims, and he's going to blow up a number of things, he says. Well, CNN says, oh, come on, just don't take him seriously. It's not that big a deal. Well, he looks as phony can be. Now, there's phony Al-Qaeda, then there's the phony Al-Qaeda. That's the ones they put up there to be members of the phony party, so they get the double phony. Now, this is just a posting that I'm going to share with you. What the CNN article and CNN information that was released today never mentions is that Adam Gadahn, or Azam the American, oh my gosh, who besides the wrestling crowd, and no offense, I don't want all the emails from the wrestlers, but you know, if that's sort of phony also. Azam the American, that's what they say he likes to be called, and as the media refers to him, in this one posting, I don't know if it's true or not, I'm just saying that this is one posting that says he is really a Jew from California named Adam Perlman. They're saying they are serious as a heart attack that Azam the American is a Jew. He is Jewish descent or Jewish. CNN isn't the only news agency that's covering this and not mentioning this, but none of them are telling the truth. The only news media that mentioned that Azam the American is Jewish was the LA Times and the Washington Post. And then it was in a cryptic manner. Now, I'm just giving you what the power hour chatter is, because we don't get any real news coming from, since it's all fabricated and wag the dog news anyway. I'm just shocked. I'm just shocked. Number one, Azam the American says, well, we need to blow up all this stuff, and we need to do all this stuff, and we need to harm America. And they're saying, oh, come on, don't forget about that. He doesn't really mean that. Supposedly, he released some new video representing Al-Qaeda. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is getting so beyond the pale of stupid. And yet we're supposed to believe that Azam the American is not a threat when he says, he uses the B word to blow things up. Now, you or I, if we can each actually spell the words blow up and bomb, then we are immediately hauled off, taken for some secret, waterboarding in some third world country until they determine, oh, never mind, they were no threat. Well, yeah, they're half dead also, but, you know, well, that's just the way it goes because we're fighting for the security of this country. Well, at the same time, there's this new law that expands the power to wiretap. President Bush signed a new law yesterday that it, why does he work on Sundays? Why doesn't he just, you know, watch football or something or eat pretzels or something? President Bush signed a new law yesterday that expands the government's power to wiretap phone calls and emails on American soil without court oversight. Translation, all your phone calls and all your, whatever you're saying, is being watched and recorded. I don't think there's any question that that's taking place. And I, you know, we always question, well, can they see through your television set? Well, of course. Obviously, they're much further down the road than we could have ever imagined or would ever want to think that our country would stoop to. Because it's all about control of you and me. It has nothing to do with terrorism. Nothing to do with terrorism. In fact, the New York Times reports today that the IBM computer, the supercomputer contract, is just about ready to come into fruition. Translate that means it's already done and in place. That's my opinion. The National Science Foundation is planning to award an IBM contract to build the world's fastest supercomputer at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. The decision to bring the machine, which will cost $200 million to build, and may cost more than $400 million during its five-year lifetime, is already proving to be controversial. Why? Well, word of the design to award the contract to IBM to build a production version of a computer that is now intended for the Pentagon's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, otherwise known as DARPA, the Black Projects Agency of the Pentagon, has created widespread concern in the past week among some computer scientists involved in designing and building the nation's high-performance computers. The new computer is said to be the first supercomputer capable of, ready for this, 1,000 trillion mathematical operations a second. 1,000 trillion. Any concept of that number? I don't. Now they can only probably do 1 billion, trillion, thousand, whatever. It's a computing benchmark known as a pentaflop. Petaflop, P-E-T-A-F-L-O-P. The machine will become a magnet for the world's most advanced and challenging scientific research projects. Several government supercomputing scientists said that they were concerned that the decision might raise questions about impartiality and political influence. The process needs to be above all suspicion. It is in the interest of the national community, and there is not even a cloud of suspicion, and there already is one. For most of the last two decades, the fastest computers in the United States have been located at either national laboratories at Los Alamos or Livermore, California. They are largely used for computing tasks related to the design and preservation of nuclear weapons and other classified applications. Guess what it's going to be used for now? What you had for breakfast, who you called, how you went to work, what car you drove, you get the drift. We'll be right back after this four-minute break. Stay tuned to the Power Hour.
people who use supplements are learning more about herbs and their effectiveness, and so are the people who do the research and make the supplements. Turmeric has been long known to be a balancing and detoxifying herb, and curcumin is the active part of turmeric. Curcumin 98 is 98% curcumin, and ongoing studies are showing that curcumin is helping people who suffer from acne, allergies, autoimmune disorders, burns, chickenpox, diabetes, liver damage, rashes, tumors, ulcers, eye problems, multiple sclerosis, and more. Testimonies are rolling in from folks who've tried curcumin, and the results are some of the best we've ever seen. There are 500 milligrams of curcumin in each of the 200 capsules, and each capsule also contains bioperin, which doubles the effectiveness of the curcumin, and each jar is only $34.95. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Curcumin 98 is getting rave reviews across the board, and you just may add your voice to those who are singing the praises of Curcumin 98. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 and order your Curcumin 98 today.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson, here for the 2007 Red Book. The commodity markets like gold, silver, copper, aluminum, and oil have exploded over the last year. This is a glaring testimonial of how quickly the U.S. dollar can be devalued. Many have turned to precious metals to provide a safe haven while increasing the potential profits. Though accumulating precious metals has been a proven method for the storage of wealth, it is important that you understand the market you are getting into. Midas Resources is offering the Red Book and Silver Dollar for only $27.95. The Red Book is the number one best-selling guide to gold and silver coins. Call for your copy today. It's 800-686-2237. If you've already accumulated or plan to get into the precious metals market, you simply must have the Red Book in your library. Call 800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
The digestive tract, a natural waste factory built within all of our bodies. Roughly 25 feet of tunnels designed to absorb nutrition and then dispel the waste. But what happens when the waste gets clogged up? More than 4 million Americans have frequent constipation, accounting for 2.5 million physician visits a year. Now there's AlloCleanse, an all-natural formula based on herbs and safe enzymes. AlloCleanse gently sweeps the entire digestive tract and supports comfortable, regular bathroom habits. You'll feel lighter, and you'll feel clean inside. And when you remove the waste buildup with AlloCleanse, you'll have more energy. Energy to use on other things, besides worrying about constipation.
For a risk-free trial of AlloCleanse, call 1-800-890-3525. Call in now to find out how you can get two free gifts with your order. Try AlloCleanse risk-free by calling 1-800-890-3525. That's 1-800-890-3525.
Not only is hurricane season just around the corner, but also we all live with the possibility of tsunamis, terrorist threats, floods, and earthquakes. This means that it's time to get self-reliant with your drinking water. If a disaster strikes you, your water supply may become compromised and undrinkable. So what can you do? Simple. Get yourself a Travel Berkey water purification system. Berkey has revolutionized the way water is purified simply and naturally. So powerful, this portable system can purify raw, untreated water by removing pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, chemicals, and heavy metals. Prepare now and make sure your water supply is secure during an unexpected disaster. Get the emergency Travel Berkey water purifier for only $204 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Mention the Power Hour and you'll get a free LED emergency flashlight, a $15 value. Order today. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Are things freer in America today than they were a couple years ago?
Welcome back to the Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley and Dave Von Kleist. Dave will be joining us at the top of the hour. Just to let you know, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by Mike Taz. He has some amazing success to tell you, an amazing success to tell you about, and we want to hear from him because our UK listener, who has cerebral palsy, has had some of the most wonderful experiences as a result of some of the items that the Power Hour promotes. And I want you to hear from him yourself. Now, this one is one we're all going to be interested in because it could relate to all of us in some form or fashion. So Mike Taz will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. Now, second hour, our guest is David Eisenberg. The subject is going to be the military contractors. We've been hearing about the abuse of military contractors or the abuse of the foreign workers. Well, we're going to find out from him what that story is. Along with, in the third hour, Stephen Zarlinga is going to talk about some monetary reform issues that I think probably, as Richard Cook said, you know, the infrastructure has started collapsing. So we need to hear what they have to say today. So we'll be talking in just a little while with them. Back to the stories that are just blowing me away. The supercomputer, first of all, that is going to be designed. And again, this new computer is capable of a computing benchmark known as the petaflop. What a name, petaflop. The new computer is to be the first supercomputer capable of 1,000 trillion mathematical operations a second. That is just, I mean, it's beyond conception, but I think that's probably exactly what they plan on doing with respect to monitoring every single thing about every single person. They're telling you, it's in your face, just like we're bringing the Iraqis into the United States to train them here. Oh, by the way, it's the second group. You mean you didn't know that? Well, I thought you did. Several government supercomputing scientists said they are concerned about the decision. And a lot of people are saying, no, no, no. But, of course, if the money's already there, if the place is already there to develop it at the University of Illinois, and if they're all set and it's in the New York Times, come on. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's already going to be a duck. They've already got the plans for it, or they've already done it. A researcher for the Pittsburgh Supercomputer Center, who identified himself as Grouchy Old Coot in a web blog posting last week, said having the NSF buy a machine and hand it to the DOE, Department of Energy, is, well, very unexpected. The Department of Energy has plenty of machines of its own, and the NSF wants to get its work done, not the DOE's. The posting was removed on Thursday, but not before it was circulated among supercomputer researchers. Do you understand what this means? I think the people here do. Now, this law that expands the wiretapping we were talking about is just perfect timing. I mean, they're telling you exactly what is taking place. Not what's going to take place, but what is taking place. And just before midnight on Saturday, Congress passed the Protect America Act of 2007. How benign can it be? Well, I'm being sarcastic because obviously it's not benign. It was largely drafted by the White House and received no committee hearing. The bill carves out a broad exemption from 1978 law that requires the government to obtain a judge's permission to monitor calls and emails in the U.S. soil. The new law allows a national security agency to spy freely on foreigners overseas when they communicate with Americans. So that means any phone call, I mean, just like the one that's going to take place in about 3 or 4 minutes with Mike Taz, would be subject to that ruling. It enables the NSA to resume a form of the once-secret warrantless wiretapping program that Bush launched after the terrorist attacks of September 11th. The law also makes clear that the NSA does not need to obtain a judge's permission to monitor phone calls and emails if both parties are overseas, even if the communications happen to be routed through switching hubs on U.S. soil. Ladies and gentlemen, everything will come under their jurisdiction. Every phone call, every time, at any place. Now, the whole idea behind this is to catch you saying something that might be interpreted as questionable. Might be interpreted by, doesn't make any difference who, but I mean them. And if they determine that you've said something questionable, obviously they can come and round you up. It is very scary. It is a police state. There is no question about it. Now, at the same time, though, that they can come get you and me for having said the B word or the, it doesn't make any difference what word it is, the hunt for Osama bin Laden, now they say, is, wow, we're just like, can't figure out where this guy is. In the hunt for Osama bin Laden, the United States and its allies have gotten nowhere, says Afghan President Hamid Karzai. Why? It is by design. We're going to be right back after this 3-minute break, and we're going to go back and talk about Azam the American just a little bit. Stay tuned. 3-minute break.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, this is Joy Schmiley, and most of you already know how Miracle 2 products can be used in the garden to control pests, help your flowers and vegetables absorb nutrients, and promote growth. Most of you already know how it cleans around the house without harsh chemicals or toxins, cutting through grease and leaving your hands soft and healthy. Most of you already know how the moisturizing soap and neutralizer leaves your hair and skin feeling fresh and clean. And for those of you who've never tried Miracle 2, you owe it to yourself to find out why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap is a miracle. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829 and try Miracle 2 products today. The 76 startup package includes all five of the Miracle 2 products, an $80 value, only $76, and that includes the shipping. Call 877-817-9829. 877-817-9829 and order your Miracle 2 products today. Then you'll know why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Government is best, which governs least.
Wake up and smell the fascism.
Being in government means never having to say you're sorry.
What part of unconstitutional do you not understand, George?
In today's world full of tyranny and injustice, sometimes it seems the only thing we still have is our freedom of speech. Exercise your freedom of speech by purchasing your choice of hundreds of different Liberty stickers, from humorous to serious, at LibertyStickers.com. LibertyStickers.com can even customize your own bumper stickers. It's time to stand up for what you believe. Invest in your freedom. Get your stickers at LibertyStickers.com for your family, friends, and community. Go to LibertyStickers.com or call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626. And express your freedom of speech today. Call 877-873-9626. That's 877-873-9626.
You're there, middle age. So how you doing? Are you aging well? Are you healthy? How's your heart and your energy level? Are you sleeping well? Do you get up motivated and excited about life? Or are you depressed and tired, wondering where the years went? Struggling with anxiety and depression is hard, but it can be even harder as you get older. Good nutrition plays a vital role in maintaining overall well-being and good health. I'm Lucinda Bassett, president of Midwest Center for Stress and Anxiety, and I want to send you a free 30-day supply of my new vitamin supplement called Good Days that supports your physical and mental well-being. It supports energy, clarity of thinking, mood, as well as good health and disease prevention. Simplify your life. Feel better. Call now for your free one-month supply of Good Days.
Find out how to improve your mood with this free 30-day supply. Call 800-966-3401. 800-966-3401. 800-966-3401.
Welcome back to Power Hour. This is Joyce Riley. Dave Von Kleist will be joining us in just a few minutes. I'm going to get back to Adam Gadon in a few minutes because I do want to hear from... I mean, I do want you to know how absolutely stupid and fake I think this video is. Azam the American, excuse me. That's what he likes to be called. Azam the American. Come on. Oh, this is just... It makes my skin crawl that it's so stupid. But I guess there are people that are buying it, though. But we're going to move into something else right now, and that is I want to talk about some really good news. And I am thrilled that we have Mike Taz listening in the UK. Mike Taz is a young man who has suffered from cerebral palsy since birth. Of course, it's a genetic disorder, and he has suffered tremendously with this, though you would never know it when you talk to him, because he is one of the most inspiring people that I've had a chance to talk with. And he came upon a product that the Power Hour has that has literally changed his life. And there are a lot of new listeners to the Power Hour that may not know who Mike Taz is, joining us from the UK today. So, Mike, I'm going to let you introduce yourself real quickly and give us a bottom-line sort of version of where you were about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Thank you for joining us in the Power Hour this morning.
Hey, it's great to be with you again. Thank you once again for letting me share my story.
Oh, you have such incredible news today. Well, we're going to save the incredible news for a little bit later. But you were born with cerebral palsy. You're how old now?
I'm 38 now.
And you were on how many medications when you first...
In December of 2005, I was on 14 prescription medications every day.
14 prescription medications, and of course the medical system in the UK provides you with whatever you need, so it was readily available to you. And you thought that you needed these, or did you need these?
Well, of course, like most people, I assumed, now I know wrongly, that the medical profession knew what they were doing, and that I needed all this medication. Cerebral palsy is a brain condition. It is not genetic, by the way. It's congenital, but not genetic.
Oh, thank you very much.
It is stable. Once you've got it, and that's it. It doesn't change. But what it does do over time is cause the body to wear out, because the only way to move around and to make your muscles work is to use them wrongly, in effect. So the basic line is that things age more quickly than they should. So you get a similar effect that you would from age, although it's not caused by the same thing.
So someone approached you and told you about something called serapeptase, which is Cerazyme, or an enzyme that I know Robert from the UK has talked with us about a lot on the program. If you've missed those programs, they're on the archive. But Robert, through Robert's distribution of this in the UK, someone approached you about this and you began taking it.
That's right. Basically, by late 2005, the medication I was on was becoming less and less effective, and other things were going wrong. I had a major heart problem, my stomach was in a mess, my whole digestive system, in fact. My lungs were full of junk to such an extent that I couldn't string a sentence together, despite the fact that I knew exactly what I wanted to say and who I liked to talk to. My friend heard about serapeptase and told me about it in terms that it might be a useful anti-inflammatory painkiller, because the painkillers that I was taking were clearly not working. So I thought, given how ill I was, and the fact that at that time my friends had planned my funeral at least twice that I know of.
Seriously?
Oh yeah, I've seen the plans. I thought, you know, try this anti-inflammatory. It's a food supplement, so it can't do me any damage, even if it doesn't do me any good.